delivering clear, concise, and entertaining content on demand, this is SharperTalkMedia.com. Join the community. Welcome to Higher Up, the podcast designed to help you take your business to a higher level.
Get the latest news and updates on everything human resources.
Unlock the occupational DNA so you can identify, select, develop, and retain top talent.
And now your host, John Beck.
Our guest today is a sought-after speaker, facilitator, researcher, and expert on innovation in legacy organizations, corporate culture, and exponential organizations. He is a co-founder and chief learning and innovation officer of Singularity U Nordic, a collaborative venture with Singularity University in Silicon Valley. His new book is Transforming Legacy Organizations: Turn Your Established Business into an Innovation Champion to Win the Future, published by one of our favorite publishers, Wiley Publishing. And Chris Ostergaard, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me, John.
Well, we're excited to have you in Denmark. Is that right?
That's correct. I'm in Denmark.
All right. I tell you, it's just you're taking our show international. It's awesome. You know, we're excited to have you. As we get started in the interview, give us a little update. What has Chris been up to, and what's going on with Chris?
Yeah, well, other than right now, I'm actually in the middle of summer vacation with my family. Really, what's been up with Chris for a while now, other than sort of doing my day job, is that I've written this book. And it turns out that, you know, writing a book is one thing, but there's so much going on after having written a book, because you want to go out and you want to talk about it and you want to share all those insights that you've gotten. So I'm spending a lot of time on that.
Well, I can tell you, I'm excited for the interview. You know, your new book, Transforming Legacy Organizations, Turn Your Established Business into an Innovative Champion to Win the Future, published by someone we share in common, Wiley Publishing. So we're excited to jump into this. So in fact, let's just jump in. What motivated you to write this book?
Yeah, so I've been working in the space of innovation for many, many years, and both with large established companies and also with startups. And, you know, we live in the age of the entrepreneur. We hear all these stories about the unicorns that come into the market and disrupt not just companies, but entire industries. And this is really fascinating stuff. And there's a lot to learn from startups if you are a large corporate. But what also has struck me is how different innovation really is in a larger, more established company, because the systems are so much more complex. And that is what I really wanted to dive into, double click on, and really explore in depth and uncover those design principles that are important so that the larger established companies can also thrive in the future.
So the book begins with addressing, you know, these old questions that organizations need to explore in new ways. Tell us a little bit about that. And, you know, there's 6 degrees of competition. What is that all about?
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, we also live in an age of technological disruption, and we're seeing how technology is developing at an accelerating pace. Probably familiar with Moore's Law, the notion that computational power is doubling every 18 months, which has been true for many, many years. Yes. But that's sort of what underlies digitization of our companies and digitization of our industries and of our societies as a whole. And that has also been the foundation for the developments we see within artificial intelligence and robotics, mm-hmm. and within neuroscience and medicine, et cetera, et cetera. And this is going faster and faster. And that also means that, you know, regardless of whatever industry you are in, how you go about exploring those foundational questions that any company has asked itself for, you know, decades, if not hundreds of years, such as which industry am I really in and who are my competitors? You really have to look at those questions with new lenses. And when it comes to competitors, what I uncovered was a way to explore that is to play that little game that I call 6 degrees of competition where you take a value offering that you have, whatever product, service, experience it is that you're creating,
right,
and then explore like, what's my first obvious degree of competition, but then take it also beyond the obvious to the fourth, the fifth, the sixth degree, and then something really interesting starts to happen in terms of understanding not just the threats that are out there, but also the opportunities that are out there for your organization.
I can certainly relate, as our organization is in and out of so many companies, and we do business with what I also agree with, these legacy type organizations. You can almost feel when you enter into their location or start talking with their teams, business is almost wheezing. They're getting beat up by their competition. They're slow in advancing. I can certainly relate how organizations really need to start looking at how to make that transition. And you write about immune systems as a barrier toward innovation in organizations. Can you explain that? What are we talking about? That, you know, the immune systems. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so the notion of talking about immune system in regards to barriers towards innovation has been sort of popular in Silicon Valley for a number of years now. But what has really struck me was that whenever the immune system metaphor sort of came up, how much finger pointing really was going on. Mm-hmm. Because that was about, you know, top management pointing to middle management saying they don't want change. And middle management, they point to the employees, well, they don't want the change. And no, the employees, they point back to typically middle management, right?
Right.
So everybody's pointing fingers at everybody. And the notion here is that, of course, there's human resistance to change. That's a real thing, right?
Right.
But what also struck me as I researched this much more into depth is that while there is human resistance to change, in fact, it is not the most important barrier towards innovation. And what I actually found was that you can take the notion of the immune system and really divide it into three layers: the individual immune system, which goes to people's resistance to change, but also the organizational immune system and the societal immune
mm-hmm.
system.
Yes.
And in fact, the organizational immune system, I find, is much more important and a much bigger barrier towards innovation than, in fact, human resistance to change is.
Now that leads us right into culture. Culture plays in innovation. Tell us more from that perspective.
Yeah, so I like to say that really when it comes to, you know, digital transformation and all of these transformational processes that many larger companies are going through, that perhaps culture really is the hard problem, if you like. And it's much more about that than it is about technology, really. And the issue for the larger, more established organizations, the ones we sometimes call legacy organizations, is that most of them have a status quo culture. And what that means is that they are most comfortable with the existing, right? We all as human beings have all of these biases in our brains, and one of them is the status quo bias. And that literally means that we would rather not lose than win, right?
Yeah.
And that means that we are reluctant towards moving into something new. And you can translate that into the organization. And the fact here is that many well-established companies can be quite successful and are quite successful, and nevertheless, they need to be really vigilant and alert as to if they want to remain that way. They need to start transforming now. And what often keeps them back is this organizational immune system that is the most powerful one, which is constructed of things like your KPIs and reward systems.
Right.
Which is constructed of, you know, needing alignment with legacy IT and processes and legal, which is constructed also of the demands that investors and shareholders often have of returns on a relatively short notice. And particularly when we look at KPIs, key performance indicators, and reward systems, I find that there's a lot going on here that is instrumental in opening up organizations and allowing them to become much more innovative. And what has also struck me is that there's a surprising, I feel, lack of understanding or awareness of how much more important and significant the system is in regards to the individual's openness towards change or not. It's also the more complex story, and that might be part of the answer to this, right? As human beings, we also seek to try and find the simplest answers to problems.
Well, I could tell you, you know, and your book breaks all of this down, you know, in great detail. And I can tell you, I'm already, as we're talking, Chris, I'm jotting down, I already have a list of about four organizations and the CEOs that I'm very close with that I'm going to send them a copy of your book.
Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah. I mean, I could tell you, this is information I think that they would appreciate. The book discusses how these larger established organizations, you know, and they must innovate in three tracks simultaneously. What are these three tracks? I know the book's going to tell us, but give us a sneak preview of those three tracks, and why is that?
Yeah, so again, the notion here is that, you know, innovation is much harder really for the larger, more established companies because the systems are much more complex. Mm-hmm. Whereas a startup typically, you know, at least for a long period of time from starting up and scaling up, they have like one focus area, and then it's just about, you know, giving it all right at that point. But larger, more established companies that have many more things going on, and that is why they need to innovate in multiple tracks at the same time. So the first track is what I call optimizing innovation. So that's your metaphorical extra blade on the razor, right? When the razor manufacturer goes out and says, now it not only has three blades, now it has four blades, and right. then a year and a half later, it not has four blades, it now has five blades, right?
Right.
So that is a typical optimizing innovation, which in itself is good and right. You should be doing that. You should continuously try to optimize the existing and see how you can put more value into it. The problem, if you like, is that it's only for the short term, because inherently what you're doing here is you're improving upon the past. And the more extra blade you put on a razor, the less value that extra blade creates. Mm-hmm. Now, so that is why you also need to innovate in the other tracks. And the next one I call augmenting innovation, which is where you upgrade the core of the organization. That is both in terms of processes, that is also in terms of outward-looking customer value. And this is where most digital transformation projects live. Really, most digital transformation in organizations is about going from analog to digital. Or it's when companies discovered some years back, many digital companies also, we need to become mobile first because that landscape has changed. And now you see all the big tech giants taking the lead and saying, we need to be AI first. Mm-hmm. This is a continuous journey. Right? There will always be new technology that you need to understand and figure out how to leverage in your organization to become more efficient, to create even more customer value. So this is very important. It's very difficult also. Yeah. This is also where culture plays a really big part. Mm-hmm. And then finally, you have the third track, which I call mutating innovation. And this is where you invent the future. And this is where you challenge the core. So it's very different from augmenting innovation, where you're upgrading your core. In mutating innovations, you're challenging your core. So this is where you do your much more radical experiments, mm-hmm. where you explore the what ifs, what might our company be, you know, 10, 15, 20 years down the road. Because if you want to be as or more successful in the long term, the core of who you are today will mutate. It will shift its shape into something other.
General Motors just released their 2020 Corvette. It completely and radically changed. I'm talking, you know, front engine, mid engine, cab forward, just a total change, the technology in the vehicle. And there were a lot of Corvette enthusiasts who were really struggling with that change, but it was the direction of the future. And now I just read that they've sold out. So, you know, yeah. That would be a good example of how an organization is, you know, just radically changing for the future. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and I would absolutely agree. And the auto manufacturing industry is actually really interesting to look at when we talk about innovation and these three tracks, because, of course, what has happened, which is what happens in most industries, is that for too long, the incumbents have been, you know, just going about doing their optimizing innovations.
Right.
And I don't think it's probably not too much to say that, you know, the power behind Tesla has really accelerated the pace of change we see within this industry.
And Tesla was exactly the example I was thinking of as well.
Yeah, so what has then happened, of course, is that what always happens when something new and truly innovative comes along is that everybody laughs at it, right? Mm-hmm. And everybody's still laughing somehow, yeah. Right? And still waiting for Elon Musk to go broke. And maybe he will, and maybe he'll be bought, or Tesla will be bought. Who knows? That's not the most important thing here. The important thing is that what finally sort of dawned upon the incumbents was that they just optimizing on the existing was no longer enough, right? So you now actually see how everybody is turning towards moving away from the fossil fuel powered combustion engines and to going electric, right? And there are massive efforts put into this. And this borders somewhere between augmenting the existing and actually also mutating the existing. But what is also happening in auto manufacturing is that we also see the big auto companies doing something even more radical than this. You know, when you see a company like Toyota, for instance, just putting, I think it's $3 or $4 billion into building an entirely new company that is developing software for autonomous vehicles, which is the next leap, right? It's further into the future. And what might end up becoming the core or a big part of the core if you go like 10, 15 years down the road. Mm-hmm. But they're already now putting money and focus into this. And when I say already now, perhaps, I mean, they're already late to that game as well. But they do have a lot of muscle. So maybe that's enough for them. So you see, they're actually now putting a lot of effort, and most of the large auto manufacturers are doing this, into both augmenting the core, which is really high time for them to do that, but also mutating the core where they're really exploring the future of autonomous vehicles as well.
In your experience in watching, you know, these legacy type organizations, and for our listeners, what's the steps? I mean, obviously there's got to be so many, but what's going to drive an organization culturally to kind of make that shift to move down to these, you know, these tracks and explore these 6 degrees? And you know, from a cultural standpoint, we're talking people. You know, how do we get our people to understand where we are and where we're trying to go?
Yeah, I mean, step number one is always awareness, right? So you cannot create any change unless you have awareness of your current situation. And so step number one for any organization is to actually create the awareness around the need and the urgency for looking out into the world and see what is actually going on and how that impacts or might impact your organization a little further down the road. This is also why research is so important, right? One of the quotes that I really love, and which I'm also using in the book, is at least Abraham Lincoln is credited for it, where he said, "If I had 6 hours to cut down a tree, I would spend 4 hours grinding the axe." Right? And what that means, of course, is you need to do your homework, right? And you need to be really well prepared. And often we are not. And that is why I also open the book with addressing these questions, like what is the purpose, right? I mean, what is really the foundational purpose of our organization other than, you know, quote unquote, just making money for our stakeholders? What are we actually trying to achieve here? What is the big vision, or what we sometimes call a massive transformative purpose, to really drive some change in the world, right? And then to what does the competitive landscape look like, and what industries could we actually be in? And by understanding what is going on within all of these different technologies. And once you sort of open up and start to understand that and start to see how all of these technologies, AI and robotics, et cetera, are converging and enabling both individuals and organizations to do things that they never could do before. Right? Again, autonomous vehicles, but also EVs, electrical vehicles, are great examples of this. And how also industries are converging, right? Because obviously the big competitors of the auto manufacturers now, it comes from, the digital world, right? Mm-hmm. The Teslas and the Apples, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. So if you don't have that understanding, and if you don't open up to actually explore that, you cannot do the right strategy.
Right.
So you need to have that understanding first, and then based off of that understanding and that awareness, and which of course ideally needs to be anchored in top management of an organization, that then should inform the conversations they have around. So what does that mean for us?
Yeah.
I mean, what kind of initiatives should we take? And other than we need to augment our core, we need to digitize, et cetera, which is very important and also very difficult. And then also saying we also need to challenge our core and we need to start conducting a lot of experiments with technologies and within domains that we currently don't understand, but that we need to understand in order to figure out if they might show the path towards the future for us.
I can't wait to dive in deeper. And I can tell you that there are so many organizations that really, really need to hear this message. In closing, I want to first thank you for taking time, Chris, out of your family vacation. I know you guys are on holiday there. It means a lot to us, and I really appreciate it. Anything you want to mention in closing that, you know, information that you our audience just can't live without?
I think what is really crucial for any organization when it comes to towards innovation, that it's a both and not an either or perspective that they need to have on things. It's not about should we upgrade our existing or should we try and disrupt ourselves, quote unquote, which is, you know, so often sounds sexier and, mm-hmm. and sounds more important. It is both. You need to do both. And right. in order to really disrupt yourself, that is the long game. I mean, that's not something you're going to do in 3 or 6 months unless you're just like insanely, incredibly lucky. Right?
Right.
That's just not going to happen. Mm-hmm. So it's really the long game that you need to play and you really need to put resources and focus into it in order to become an innovation champion for the future.
Awesome. Well, there you have it, folks. Chris Ostergaard, and we really appreciate it. Chris, Transforming Legacy Organizations, Turn Your Established Business into an Innovative Champion to Win the Future by Wiley Publishing. Chris, tell the audience, where can we find the book?
Well, as luck will have it, it's on Amazon, so it couldn't be much more easy than that.
Absolutely. And if anyone want to, I know you do public speaking and you do some consulting, facilitation. Tell me, tell the audience if we wanted to reach out to you, is there a website that you want to give?
Absolutely. So my personal website is chrisostergaard.com, where you can read about me and my different publishings, book, et cetera, et cetera. I'm also the co-founder of Singularity U Nordic, which is an educational institution where we teach about this stuff, technological development, innovation, also ethical implications, which is part of Singularity University.
Right.
So at sunordic.org, you can find me as well.
All right, fantastic. And of course, as always, we're going to have on our website, hrhigherup.com, where you'll be able to download and we'll have all of Chris's information. And Chris, we'll put a link there to your book and we'll put links to you and your different sites so we can reach out to you. There you have it, folks. Chris Ostergaard, we really appreciate it. And we always try to, you know, give our audience those little nuggets. And we believe that this talk with Chris is loaded with them. And if it's your organization, and, you know, when we talk legacy, take a look at where you are. And, you know, this book could be something that could really help your organization today and into the future.
Thanks for listening to Higher Up with John Beck.
For show notes, updates, and more on how to break the code to unlocking occupational DNA,
join the community at hrhigherup.com
and take your business to a higher level. This has been an exclusive production of SharperTalkMedia.com. Join the community.